From the ACLU, this is At Liberty. I'm Kendall Seismeyer, your host. This May, Governor Ron DeSantis signed SB 264, a law that restricts Chinese nationals from acquiring property in the state of Florida under the guise of protecting national security. But the issue is actually pretty clear. Chinese people are not the Chinese government, and conflating the two is just the latest iteration of anti-Asian land laws and anti-Asian discrimination that date as far back as the 1880s. Rather than protecting national security, this law will actually shatter the dreams of Chinese families, students, and business owners hoping to build a life in the Sunshine State. So we at the ACLU, along with our partners, are suing Florida over SB 264, arguing in Shen versus Simpson that the law legitimizes and expands housing discrimination against people of Asian descent, and therefore violates both the Constitution and the Fair Housing Act. Joining us today to discuss this case are Bethany Lee, legal director of the Asian American Legal Defense and Education Fund, and one of our co-counsels in the case, and Echo King, an immigration lawyer and co-founder of the Florida Asian Americans Justice Alliance, a group that is rallying the support of Floridians against this kind of discrimination. Bethany, Echo, welcome to At Liberty.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for having me.
So SB 264 has been in effect in Florida since July. In the broadest sense, this law severely restricts many immigrants from China, Cuba, Venezuela, Syria, Iran, Russia, and North Korea from buying property in much of the state. This is bad from the get-go. But what's even worse is that notably, these restrictions and criminal penalties are harsher for people from China. So Bethany, I'm wondering if you can just start us off by giving us an overview of what SB 264 entails and what it prohibits.
Sure. As you mentioned, SB 264 in some sense has two different categories. One that focuses on foreign countries of concern, that includes China. Another category that focuses specifically on China. And it's the category that focuses specifically on China that we are most concerned with, given the draconian penalties and restrictions that are imposed on Chinese nationals. First, it prevents Chinese nationals, people who are so-called domiciled in China, from buying real property. And there are certain restrictions on close to military installations, for example. And then there's also registration requirements that if Chinese people already have certain property, by a certain date, they need to register with the state. And if you don't do some of these things, if you don't do any of these things, there are criminal penalties.
Yeah. So as you just outlined, the majority of these restrictions apply to immigrants who seek home or property ownership. But there's also a component about real estate professionals and sellers. What does the bill say about them?
That's right. There's an affidavit requirement that says that they have to affirm that they have not violated the law. And if they have violated the law, then they're subject to criminal penalties, misdemeanor in addition to a $1,000 fine.
Yeah, I think that's extremely notable because if you think about it, there being kind of two mechanisms, one being just the inaccessibility of people from China to buy property, but also this like this punishment mechanism on the other side of someone knowingly selling property to Chinese people being criminalized. I imagine that would yield a real chilling effect in and actually kind of emphasize or elevate anti-Asian discrimination more broadly.
I think that's absolutely true. I think the fact that this applies to real estate transactions across the board, and anytime anyone who looks vaguely Asian walks into a real estate agency, what is that real estate agent then supposed to do? Are they then supposed to ask for a passport from anyone who looks vaguely Asian? What does that mean? Also, what is that doing to essentially everyday people? Are we asking them to discriminate based on national origin? in their day-to-day. That's almost what the law seems to require as a practical matter.
Everybody's caught into this because everybody could be sellers. And because the sellers don't know who to sell it to. They just know that there's a law, SB 264, because on the contract, there at the bottom of the contract says SB mentioned about the foreign countries of concern as SB 264, but it didn't really clearly define all the terms. The ambiguity of the terms like domicile, what does domicile exactly mean? Who is restricted and which area is restricted? It's never defined anywhere. So when people, it's regular, just ordinary seller, when they see this, they just know, oh, China is one of that. And then I will face criminal penalty if I do something wrong. We have a home builder talking about this, and they said they don't know where to build a house for our group of people. And then their sales agent, they are uncomfortable asking people like, where are you from? Or you have green card, right? Because they know that's probably Fair Housing Act violation. But in the meantime, if they don't ask, then they may violate SB 264. It's a mess. And also the affidavit part of it, Bethany mentioned affidavit. That doesn't come until the end of when it's closing. Then the title company is drafting up their own affidavits. So there's no uniform affidavit for people to sign. And then the home builders put this burden on the buyer to determine if you are actually a restricted category. So the ordinary buyer, they have no idea, they have no knowledge if I am supposed to buy this house or not, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're exactly right. Echo, I'm wondering, when you first heard about SB 264 and you heard about these kind of enforcement mechanisms and the criminalizing of real estate professionals who might sell to someone who is from China, what did that bring up for you?
Well, when we first heard about this bill that was April of this year, I couldn't believe it because I thought it's fake, that people are circulating fake, you know, like fake things. So, but I read it three times and then realized this is, and I also went to the website, Florida State Legislature website, and then I saw that. I was completely shocked because before that, in February, I attended, there's a Zoom meeting for Texas alien land bill that's similar, but it's not as severe. And at that time, I thought it was already really bad, but then I never imagined something like this would happen in Florida. And when I heard about that, it's already passed the Senate unanimously. It was bipartisan bills passed it unanimously. So, and at that time, our whole community was completely shocked. We didn't know what to do. We couldn't believe it. We went testify, we protested, nothing worked, and it still passed the legislature very fast. In like 2 weeks, it just passed and became law. And after that, we felt the actual impact. It's not imagining things, what could happen, right? It's actually happening daily basis. So we just had a Zoom meeting. We invited home buyers, real estate agents, home builders, to talk about this, how they really felt. I mean, this law, just like Bethany was talking about, the punishment provision, the criminal penalty, the confusion. Basically, mm-hmm. Not only home buyers, Chinese buyers, Chinese people are facing the discrimination. It's everybody in the state of Florida potentially facing this.
I want to pull out a theme that you both have mentioned, which is that there has been a lot of confusion. And I think usually when we see confusion in an enforcement of laws, that's usually an intentional way to create an even harsher impact. Because if people don't know if it applies to them, then they might act more conservatively and they might discriminate more. You know, we see this across the board in all different kinds of lawmaking, any kind of vague, broad language, language that is not easy to parse through, that lawyers even have a hard time understanding, let alone individuals who are just seeking to buy a home or seeking to sell a home. I want to move back a little bit and just talk about. So SB 264 is actually part of a three-bill package along with SB 846 and SB 258. These bills were meant to, quote, counteract the malign influence of the Chinese Communist Party in the state of Florida. And upon assigning the bill, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis said, "I'm proud to sign this legislation to stop the purchase of our farmland and land near our military bases and critical infrastructure by Chinese agents." Why do you think that the Chinese community is being singled out compared to those from other countries that the bill references?
I do think politicians on both sides of the aisle are getting bonus points for any anti-China rhetoric and anti-China push they can display. And that, unfortunately, is part of the history of the way the United States has reacted when any foreign country poses some sort of threat, real or not. And in this situation, what I would say is that it's actually more that elected officials seem afraid of China as an economic threat, but there's these trumped up concerns about national security.
So both of you mentioned that this is bipartisan, that even some Democrats have kind of signed on. And Echo, you mentioned that you originally heard of this kind of law when you were on a Zoom recording about something that was going on in Texas. So alien land laws as a broader category are actually like somewhere in process or on the books in over 30 states. And so this isn't necessarily just solely Florida, though Florida's is very punitive and I think of real increased concern to us. But I think it is worth discussing why there is this kind of trend that we're seeing across the country. And I think perhaps there's, you know, I'd like to believe that some of this is misunderstanding or just misguided folks who are responding to fear-mongering or other things. But I do want to address that kind of quote-unquote concern, if you will. You know, you mentioned that this tough-on-China rhetoric and policy has really gained popularity. How do you respond to this concern? And why do you think it's such a temptation for both parties, people on both sides of the aisle, to fall to this kind of rhetoric?
I think it's easy and helpful for them politically, unfortunately, to cast someone as an enemy. And in this particular instance, what we're seeing is increased rhetoric against China because we have these themes about China becoming this emerging superpower that's competing with the US's power for many years. And I think politicians find it easy to blame another country for the issues that we are not actually dealing with ourselves in this country.
Mm. Echo, what about you?
Yeah, I agree. I agree. When in fact that this national security issues and all this are much more sophisticated than just restricting someone buying a house. I think people all know that. The legislators know that too. But because of they are using national security as an excuse, and they get a. People actually support that because if you everybody. Almost on the same page that, China is an enemy. They all agree on that. And I think, in fact, that this should be on a national level, not be addressed on a state at all. The state doesn't have resources to determine all the espionage and national security, those issues.
Mm. It's also, I think, bears mentioning that, Chinese people are not the Chinese government. So even if that were the quote-unquote concern, whether or not we believe it's of a real concern, a bill that targets individuals from China is perhaps not even very effective because there's no evidence that Chinese buyers of property in Florida are agents of the Chinese Communist Party or have caused harm to national security. My understanding is the state of Florida has failed to even identify any nexus between real estate ownership by Chinese citizens in general and any kind of purported harm to national security. So Is the evidence even there, really?
There's no connection between Chinese people equaling the the communist government. And I mean, I think, unfortunately, this is another example of Asian Americans being equated to the foreign policy kind of issues in the country of which either they or maybe their families and ancestors, right, originally came from. And I mean, we saw this with the Japanese incarceration during World War II, where Japanese individuals who had nothing to do with the war were still incarcerated. And so a lot of this is really based on this very unfortunate stereotype of Asian Americans as the perpetual foreigner. We could be born here, we could have lived here for generations, and still, if I'm Chinese American, I'm still equated with the Chinese government.
I really appreciate you saying that, because I think it is true. And I think we see this across all different aspects of American life. Anti-Asian discrimination doesn't just exist within the confines of alien land laws. And, you know, I think we've all seen that, and specifically the rise of anti-Asian hate that has come out of the last few years, I think, is only serving to fuel this. I also want to address one other concern that I think, you know, could potentially be making this more of a susceptible argument to foment in the, you know, general public or across party lines. It's a very tough time to be a prospective homeowner for many people. Owning property feels wholly inaccessible. We're seeing a trend in major cities where wealthy immigrants are buying investment properties, leading to disdain and concern about rising housing prices. I think it's hard sometimes for people to be sympathetic when they're focused on their own economic well-being. How would you explain this issue to people in that camp?
We are talking about in Florida, for Chinese land ownership or real estate purchase is less than 0.1%. So this is not really, we bought, you know, Chinese Americans, Chinese immigrants bought the house, or how many we bring up the prices, and that's not an issue at all. And we are talking about that people here, living here, working here, saving up their money to buy buy a startup house. It's not even allowed. It's because they like H-1B visas, right? The other day in the Zoom meeting, we have several H-1B visa holders talk about their personal story. They study hard and they finally find a job, get a job, and start a family. You know, they save up years to work to purchase this house. It's not like a wealthy immigrants that they are talking about. And really, it's not, those two issues are not related at all. And then they shouldn't be treated. We shouldn't be treated like. I mean, I think that's another stereotype, or they're trying to
conflate.
Exactly, conflate.
Yeah, no, I think, Echo, thank you so much for saying that. I mean, it also bears mentioning that even the Chinese population in Florida is actually like insanely small, but also the property purchasing percentage was, I think, really notable. Like, that has no bearing on this issue. And that's actually not what we're talking about. But I think that people can easily conflate those two things. And this is actually against the Constitution. It's actually against the Fair Housing Act to discriminate against a group of people seeking to purchase property. So it's like, it kind of doesn't matter, even if people are worried about their own economic well-being, because it's actually against civil rights and civil liberties. Bethany, I see the wheels turning in your head.
Yeah, I just thinking about your earlier question, and I would add that I think there is, there are concerns even from Asian American communities about people coming into low income neighborhoods and, you know, kind of speculating and buying property. And I think there is that perception that Asian Americans and Asians from other countries coming in are super rich, because that, you know, unfortunately, plays on another stereotype in the Asian American community about us being the model minority and being very wealthy and very smart, when that's actually a wrong stereotype, right? And that stereotype is actually quite harmful for us. I think there's a large percentage of people who are small property owners. Mm-hmm. Who kind of don't play into this stereotype of all Asians being super uber wealthy.
Yes.
That are impacted by this law.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of what is going into fuel any kind of popularity for these kinds of laws is just rife with stereotypes. And then perhaps just a lack of real interrogation of these kind of false premises that are, in a lot of ways, probably, as we mentioned, being fed to people by politicians to score political points, because it's easy to, it's like an easy play for them. I really appreciate just us taking a moment to address kind of the misconceptions, because I think it's really important in order to just build public education and knowledge and awareness on this issue. I also want to talk about the fact that it's a civil liberties and civil rights issue. And I'm wondering, Bethany, if you could speak a little bit to that.
Sure. So the alien land law in Florida violates the Constitution in a variety of ways. First is the equal protection violation, and that is because the law discriminates based on national origin and alienage. And so, I mean, we've seen this in a variety of other contexts. This is certainly true with SB 264. And also, there's also preemption concerns, right? The funny thing about what's happening in Florida is that with this law is that Florida is almost treating itself as its own little fiefdom country, right? And saying, we get to regulate and deal with national security, and we get to figure out and decide who gets to stay out of the state of Florida. And the United States doesn't matter if you have this whole set of, this whole infrastructure set up around this area. We get to decide. And then there are just fair housing concerns, right? You're not supposed to be able to discriminate in housing based on race, alienage, and national origin. And, you know, for the variety of reasons that we've talked about, that is already happening. And there are even broader concerns in terms of broad impact on not just the Chinese American community, but also the Asian American community. You talked about the rise in anti-Asian violence earlier, and that is part of the concern in terms of the type of racial animus that this type of bill and all of the rhetoric that's been associated with trying to get this bill passed into law has stoked, right? Because you can't, on the one hand, as a government, say you're against anti-Asian violence and trying to support the Asian American community in fighting against these individual assaults and incidents, while on the other hand, casting us as an enemy.
I just want to share an example. We have a House representative. Her name is Anna Eskamani. She's very supportive of our fight and our cause. She posted something on her Facebook social media about this bill, saying this is how bad this discriminatory this bill is. And some people made comments under her posting saying that, why do you support our enemy? And also, when I say something, I try to explain this bill, and somebody send a private message to me saying that, go home. So this is actually really scary. If this kind of law really passes, I really think this, I'm fearful for our Asian Americans, also fearful for the children. I don't know this kind of people. I mean, this group of type of people, what they will say to their children. And, you know, So it's the whole, just like Bethany has mentioned, this type of law definitely will make the Asian hate, crimes will go up, increase Asian hate crimes.
I'm really glad that you mentioned that, Echo, and I think it's really important to talk about the kind of broad impact and the seepage that we will see from not just the immediate discrimination of people being unable to access homeownership, but also just this like broader soup that we are creating in the state of Florida that will only contribute to the anti-Asian discrimination and the rise in anti-Asian hate. According to a survey from the Asian American Foundation this year, 1 in 2 Asian Americans report feeling unsafe in the U.S. due to their ethnicity, and nearly 80% say they don't feel fully like they belong or are accepted. On the other hand, 79% of Americans do not believe people of Chinese descent living in America pose a threat to the U.S. I think that that's really important to mention, that there is like this gross discrepancy. And I'm really glad that you mentioned that it will make you feel unsafe, because I think that's really important for people to understand. And we've been here before. I think we've kind of touched on this, Bethany, you mentioned, you know, we can talk about Japanese Americans' incarceration during World War II, the Chinese Exclusion Act, the surveillance of South Asians in the post-9/11 period. All of this is very reminiscent of our history. What do you think we need to do here, Echo, moving forward to make, to start unraveling some of this, the issue that 80% of Asian Americans say they don't feel like they fully belong or accepted? How do we start to chip away at that? And how is this case part of that?
Well, first we have to stop this kind of law from passing, right? Because this is legalized hate. At the beginning, like when we had the COVID, you know, China virus, that is just people are saying it, but now it's legalized. So definitely this is the first thing we need to stop that, to stop this kind of law. And also I think we should educate the people, like general public, that we are here. We are Chinese people don't equal Chinese government. That's really not true. And as a matter of fact, it's the opposite. We are not the enemy, because we come here because we like everything here better, because we believe in a democracy, we believe in all the rights. That's what we come here for. And now you treat us as the enemy. So that's not right. Doesn't make sense even. So those are the education. Mm-hmm. I think it's also the key. So it's just a lots of work to do. In my, we have this AAPI group, chat group, and lots of people are expressing concerns and trying to, you know, thinking about moving out of the state. You know, but I think this is, Florida is the worst in terms of this. But then I think the overall, it feels like the, it's the trend that the China, especially when China-U.S. tension increases, and I we are fearful, truly fearful. It just looks like the history is really repeating itself, and you know, so we truly hope that we can stop this. We really need to stop it.
We do, and I really I thought that what you said about legalizing hate was so clear and so profound, like that we're actually empowering in a lot of ways people to hate other people. Part of ameliorating this issue is the lawsuit. That's a component. I think the other component is understanding where this comes from and understanding the history. Why is it so important that we understand where we have been in this country in our exclusionary, discriminatory policies towards Asian Americans more broadly in order to effectively prevent this from happening again?
I think that blocking access to history and what has actually happened in this country is problematic for understanding how we should be moving forward, mm-hmm. right? And I think that's exactly what we're seeing with things like book bans. That's exactly what we're seeing.
Also happening in Florida. Yeah,
exactly. I think that's exactly what we're seeing when we talk about this fight for in ethnic studies curriculum and K-12 and in higher education. Because ultimately, if we are not being race conscious and paying attention to what it means to be interacting in this society because of our race, because that's the reality of what's happening, then it's impossible for us to actually understand why something like Florida's new alien land law has actually passed, right? Because, I mean, what I would say about the law is that I think, unfortunately, it's more of a symptom of the structures that are baked in to to, you know, our different government systems, legislatures, institutions. And so, so it's in some sense, well, I think it's surprising actually that 100 years after the original alien land laws that we actually haven't progressed as a country and we're enacting new alien land laws, right? Florida actually was the last state to repeal its alien land law in 2018. And here we have a new one in 2023. So it's both surprising and not surprising, right? Because we think with the civil rights movement and all that has progressed in the society that that we wouldn't return to what Echo is saying is as state-sponsored violence, legalized discrimination, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Echo, in hearing about the law in... You've responded, and I know that you founded the Florida Asian Americans Justice Alliance earlier this year. Can you tell us about the movement of people that are against this law and what it has been like to join hands with other folks who are impacted and allies and really take to the streets on this?
Yeah, we... I mean, I lived in U.S. for 20 years, right? And then I'm an attorney, but I never envisioned myself to get involved in politics. Just like many Asian American first generation immigrants, I just focus on my career, family, you know, until this, I heard about this law in April. And many of my community people are same like me. We always work hard and just focus on ourselves and our family. We just really stay quiet, right? We don't really try to cause any trouble. We're just complying with the law. That's all we're trying to do, raise family and raise children. But then this law that says that Chinese people are Section 7 is so blatantly just, you cannot be, you know, this is a racist. But even we don't want to just like Bethany say, we don't want to look through, you know, racial lenses, but this is racial. This is a racist. So many of us, we tried to talk, we were shocked and we tried to talk to legislators, but then, you know, we feel like we were not being heard. So we feel powerless, you know, and sometimes hopeless. But then we still remain hopeful because I believe that we still live in, America is still supposed to be the best country in the world. And we come here because of that hope that we have, that, you know, the hope that we have, the American dream and beacon of hope, all those concepts we believe in. That's why we are here. And I think we, through our fight, we have struggled, but through our fight, we should be able to get better. And I just want to, my community people know that, you know, we really, as Asian American, we are fast growing population minority in U.S. right now, and really need to be aware, get engaged and be aware of the surroundings and just, you know, wake up. This is a wake up call, and we must stand united and just, you know, not only focusing ourselves, we cannot stay quiet anymore.
Yeah. I mean, it sounds like it's been a really big moment for you in your life to say, like, I'm gonna take this on, and this is necessary. And it's awesome to see what you've been able to achieve by rallying people together on this issue. Bethany, where are we in the lawsuit process? You mentioned that we're making kind of like what legal precedents we're using to argue this case. How are you feeling about the development of the case itself and its chances in court?
So we're at the 11th Circuit. We had asked for, the plaintiffs have asked for a preliminary injunction that was denied by the district court, and the plaintiffs are appealing that. And so, I mean, it's very clear that this law is discriminatory and that it violates the Constitution, that it violates the Fair Housing Act. It's unfortunate that the judge previously determined, among other things, that, you know, saying that this law applies to people who are domiciled mm-hmm. in China, for example, doesn't equate to national origin discrimination, which doesn't actually make much sense when you think about the fact that 99% of the people in China are Chinese, right? And so we're very hopeful that the 11th Circuit will understand how blatantly discriminatory this law is.
As we wrap up here, I just want to say I appreciate you both talking about this fight against the bill and addressing the tension around the issue. You know, you've articulated kind of where we are in the case and kind of what we're hoping to see from here. When folks are listening to this and they're thinking, oh, I want to support against the movement against these laws, what can folks do if they're wanting to kind of join forces?
Yes, this is a really challenging. We have so many challenges to fight against this bill because we are, you know, we have really limited manpower and resources, and we are trying to overturn this law. You know, it's a long fight, but then we hope that more people can join us, join Fajia, and support us and help us to navigate. We are still trying to navigate. We are our own lobbyists. We are doing everything our own because we don't have any other support yet. So, and we don't have enough resources to hire lobbyists to do anything like that. But we just still remain hopeful that, you know, we can little by little, we do our Zoom meeting, we educate our legislators.
Where can people go to follow your work?
We have a website, fajia.org, so people can join us as members so we can do more works together. And I hope people can also donate to our cause. And also, we are very grateful and thankful for what you guys have been doing. The lawsuit is a tremendous help. I mean, we didn't know who to turn to. And when Bethany reached out to me and, Clay reached out to me, and that was a huge relief. And we just hope that, you know, we will win the fight.
Absolutely. And Bethany, what do you want to add?
I think there are these types of laws that equate to institutionalized violence against Asian Americans. But I also think that there's the day-to-day harassment that happens, right? So when we talk about the hate violence that has increased against Asian Americans, the majority of that violence is actually harassment, right? It's not kind of the big crimes that are blown up on TV that we see, right? But it's actually it's actually, for example, my daughter going to school and having one of her classmates say "ching chong ching" to her, and her not knowing how to respond to that, but recognizing that it's racist, right? So what does it mean for that public school system to respond to that type of incident? What does it mean for that school system to be educating students about our histories and the multiracial democracy that we live in, right? It's actually dependent on that kind of day-to-day education and political consciousness raising that we don't end up with this type of law in the future.
Thank you so much for that, Bethany. I really appreciate you sharing that story, and both of you, just really deeply appreciate you joining me and helping to unpack this issue for folks. It's been a pleasure to speak with you. And I just feel so hopeful knowing that we have both of the two of you on this issue. So thank you.
Thank you so much. We're excited to see you at the next rally that Fajia organizes.
There you go. Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me. And we hope that we can win the fight.
Thanks so much for listening. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe to At Liberty wherever you get your podcasts and rate and review the show. We really appreciate the feedback. At Liberty is a production of the ACLU, produced by me, Kendall Seesmeyer, and Vanessa Handy. This episode was edited by Matt Boynton. Julia Silva Forbes is our intern. Until next week, stay strong.